I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To the greatest show in sport.
The biggest football game in the history of Western civilization. What a ride it's been.
It's week two. How did we do from week one? And who is in your top five, 1 through 5, 5 through 1 of the NFL Power Rankings every Wednesday at this time here on Sean and RJ. Franco LaFranco Injury Attorney text line to get in your rankings. And how did you do last week? 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Before we score ourselves and give the week two update, Bobby, how's the rest of the country looking at the Cowboys?
So we take the six top national outlets and the way that they power rank the team. So this is NFL.com, CBS, The Athletic, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and Yahoo. And after you take the rankings and kind of average them out, here are the top 10 teams in the NFL, 1 through 10. Kansas City, San Francisco, Detroit, Buffalo. Buffalo went up in most people's rankings. Philadelphia, number 5. Houston, 6. Dallas, 7. Up 3 spots from 10 last week.
So that's improvement.
Baltimore, 8. Miami, 9. And then rounding out the top 10, the biggest jump in the rankings this week, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers moved up 11 spots in people's rankings.
All right.
All right. Now for our rankings. Last week, Sean, you had Kansas City.
Buckets.
San Fran.
Money.
Baltimore.
Awesome. Wait. That's a loss.
No, it counts. Because Kansas City beat him. The team you had ahead of Baltimore.
Oh, this is the fight again.
Okay.
This is the fight again.
Let's settle this. We have to vote. Explain this.
I think that if you had a team ranked behind another team in your rankings and the team that you had ranked higher won, you were correct in your evaluation of the two teams. And so that should count as a win.
What if it's like 50 to nothing? And then I had Baltimore 3.
I think it just does a hard
rule. So you're saying I should not get dinged?
No.
For the team that lost to a team in the top five that's above them?
Because you had the team. Yeah, if it's one of the teams you have above them, you were correct in evaluating them.
What do you think, Peyton? How would you vote?
I disagree with it last year because I got dinged so many times for doing that. But, you know, if we're going to start it, you know, week one, doing it all season long, I'm fine with it.
I don't have a problem with it. I think it's fine. I think it makes sense. It's a fair point. It makes sense.
Okay, let's do it then. So I'm still undefeated.
All right, so then that was Baltimore 3, Detroit, and then Houston.
5-0, 4-0. 4-0-1. How do you want to call it that?
You can call it that.
4-0-1.
I had Kansas City, Detroit, San Fran, Baltimore, and Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Ooh, that was a tough one.
Robert
had Kansas City, San Fran, Detroit, Houston, Baltimore.
Boom. 4-0-1.
Peyton had San Francisco, Kansas City, Baltimore, Detroit, and Houston.
All right, so you're the only one with a definitive loss here.
I'm the only one with a definitive loss. Okay. I'll have another one this week, I'm sure.
All right, let's go ahead and start it off. So none of us had the Cowboys in our top five.
No. Last week, no.
Okay.
Last week, no. Oh, is that a hint?
Choppy, number one. Yeah, you just gave it away.
Number one, I have Kansas City. I do believe they had the toughest week one test, and they passed. They got the best player in the league and arguably the best coach, and I assume the next time they're not number one on this list will probably be 2032 or something. But, Kansas City, they're still the best team in my opinion, so I got them number one.
I've got Kansas City number one as well. And they were just as impressive as I figured they would be, and they'll continue to get better.
I didn't make a change. I moved Kansas City up. I think the loss of Christian McCaffrey bumped San Francisco down. They lost their best player.
Why? They have a better running back.
Yeah, right.
Making less money.
I don't think they do.
But did the Shanahan family in general just find running backs anywhere?
Yes.
On the street?
They've shown that they could just plug certain people into their scheme for anything and it works.
But yes, Chiefs won for me.
Kansas City won.
All right.
Easy. Can you give me, do you have mine in order last week?
Yes.
What was it?
You had Kansas City, San Fran, mm-hmm. Baltimore, mm-hmm. Detroit, mm-hmm. Houston.
I'm going to save some time. That's my exact five this week.
You're not moving Baltimore at all?
I think this is the first time. I'm not moving them over San Francisco.
No,
I have Baltimore 3. Why would I move Baltimore down?
Just like the fact that Detroit won a tough game against the Rams.
Yeah, Baltimore, I mean, look, they should not have won the Kansas City game, but they were there.
I mean, they were there at the end.
They
literally
were there at Arrowhead. So I give you more credit for losing to the Chiefs than I give you credit for beating the Rams. That was a nice win. But what Detroit did to me was not more impressive than Baltimore. I think this could be the first time that I kept teams exactly the same from week to week. So that is a little radio wrinkle I wanted to throw in there, even though you thought I was just being lazy and cutting the segment short. I have the exact same five as last week.
Okay.
All right.
My number two is Detroit. I thought about San Fran here. I had Detroit here last week. I thought about San Fran, but I think Detroit had a tougher week one game.
San Fran handled their team.
They did. But Detroit showed me a couple things. One, they got out to the big lead. They're up 17-3. And then in losing the lead, they've actually lost the lead. They had to answer it with a game-tying drive as time was winding down.
Yeah.
And then they really asserted their will in overtime. That was three. That showed me quite a bit.
That was a Man Campbell drive.
That was a Man Campbell
drive.
That
was an Applebee's drive.
So that was a statement to me. So I have Detroit number two.
I have San Francisco number two. That has not moved, and I'm not going to bump them down for missing Christian McCaffrey for one more week. I still think San Francisco. It's clear to me, Kansas City, San Francisco, and then there's a drop.
I hate them even more now after the Kyle Shanahan running back drama. I hate that, and I want to like Kyle Shanahan. I want to, University of Texas, all that stuff, but the throwing under the bus, leaving someone out to dry, lying about it with the league, Friday night starting, the sketchiness, just give me another reason to hate them.
Yeah, the 49ers number two. Again, it would be 1A, 1B for me if I could rank it, but 49ers two, they're without Christian McCaffrey. I mean, I'm not worried about them going to Minnesota this weekend, but I think it's going to be a little closer than people think.
And the spread moved already 2 points?
The San Fran spread? Yeah, it went from 4.5 to 6.
So does that say anything about McCaffrey that it moved like that, or just more about Minnesota?
It was just a lot of movement on the line.
So you don't think it could be that, like, they are starting to hear that, the initial Schefter report that McCaffrey may be out is looking like he may be back?
No, probably not. Like, generally, like, running backs aren't moving the line. Now, McCaffrey might, because he's, you know, Christian McCaffrey, and he does a lot of receiving stuff, but I think that's just, it was just a bad line.
All right, San Fran was two for me.
All right, San Fran was two for you. I have San Fran three. No matter what, for Detroit, for Dallas, doesn't matter. All roads to the title in the NFC is going to go through them, right? Like, they're going to have to. You're going to run into that team sooner or later. So whether you're the Rams or the Lions or the Cowboys or the Philadelphia Eagles, you're going to have to beat them along the way.
Runs through them makes me think like home field.
Oh no, I mean, like, you're going to have to go through them at some point.
Okay. All right.
So I had last week Kansas City, San Francisco, Detroit, Houston, Baltimore.
Yes.
Okay. So we have a change at three.
Ooh.
We have the Houston Texans.
Oh. Going up to number
three. Over that win?
Yeah. Because look, we're talking about all these games that we're talking about in, you know, between Detroit and Kansas City and stuff like that. These were struggle games. Houston struggled on the road, controlled the clock for 40
against
minutes.
Against the Colts.
40
you
minutes.
You are punishing these other teams.
This is not a punishment.
When you get moved down, it's a punishment. It's a demotion.
It's a flip. It's a single flip.
Like, you're like, oh, my God, look at the Colts win. Wow. You lost to Detroit and the Rams and, like, Kansas City?
Look, if
Baltimore? Oh, my God.
If you almost lose to Matthew Stafford, you should just retire. All of them, the whole team. No, but here's the thing is that Houston controlling the clock for 40 minutes, they were one of the worst running teams of the NFL last year. They showed they can do it this year. Mixon looks completely refreshed, rejuvenated. That defense is really strong, and Stroud hasn't shown any, like, signs of slipping. So I've got a flip. I've got Houston up 1-3.
Wow. Okay.
Peyton, last week you had Baltimore here.
I did drop them one spot, so I moved the Lions up to three. I mean, I do think, people think, you know, it's going to be a hangover from last year, their NFC championship run, you know, really close to the Super Bowl. I think they're going to continue to dominate the season. And with the Jordan Love injury, I mean, the Lions are the clear favorite in that division right now. So I have the Lions at three.
Number three, I had Baltimore. Four, I had Detroit.
And you're keeping them there. Yep. Okay, four. Now, I got about six teams here for these final two spots. This really, I struggled with these final. I think there's a clear line. You got Kansas City, and then you got, like, your San Fran, Detroit, and then and tier three is these guys. But since it's only one game, I only have one data point. I thought this was a really good win against a good team, a playoff team. I don't think they're going to be here in the end, but I'll give the benefit of the doubt now. I have Philly here.
Ooh.
That was a pretty good win. I don't think they're better than the Cowboys, like, at the end of the year. I think the Cowboys win the division, but
I don't hate that.
This is a better win. They had a good win.
Their offense, credit. I mean, In terms of what bothered me personally from week one, this bothered me. This bothered me that their offense scored that many points and Saquon Barkley looks like a grand slam addition. Yeah. And that Jalen Hurts was still throwing and finding A.J. Brown deep. That offensive output bothered me.
Number four, I have the Detroit Lions. Just down a spot. And it wasn't even like a significant. I thought Houston and Detroit were pretty close anyway to begin with. But I was more impressed again with how Houston controlled things. But Detroit looks solid. Still looks like they're a step behind San Francisco to me and Kansas City, that they're a tier down below. But Detroit, number four.
Yeah, this one was hard for me, but I have Baltimore moving down one spot from 3 to 4. I mean, they were a toenail away from possibly winning a game in Kansas City, but they
not
lost.
Not according to Lamar.
Or just a wide screwed. Open throw to Lamar or from Lamar
that's right.
from winning the game.
They had a true quarterback, but yeah, I have Baltimore number four.
All right, my four was Detroit and the armpit five.
All right, so number five, I thought about Houston, but I think the Colts stink.
And the Colts stink.
Your Mr. Anthony Richardson has the best chance to be Mahomes.
I know. I like him. I really do like him. Chris Ballard, I don't know. They're kind of like the Titans to me. They're just a boring organization. I thought about Miami, but they were dominated in the first half. Dominated. I thought about Buffalo. Same thing, though. Dominated in the first half.
Thought about Buffalo. How can people move Buffalo up after that? That's insane around the country.
I didn't. I thought about it. I did put the Dallas Cowboys at number five.
Okay. NFC East represent.
Yeah. Granted, I don't know what Cleveland. I know Cleveland's a good roster. I know their quarterback stinks.
What was the most impressive win? Where's the Cowboys win or the most impressive from week one? What else was super impressive? All right. Let me just run it down. Was it more impressive than the Eagles win?
Yes.
Was it more impressive than the Ravens win?
The Ravens lost.
I'm sorry, than the Chiefs win?
No, probably not. Just in terms of quality of opponent.
Was it more impressive than the Lions win?
No.
Similar.
I think the Rams are really good.
Okay. I would argue it was more impressive. Was it more impressive than the San Fran win over the Jets?
No, not without McCaffrey.
Disagree. I mean, it's a running back.
It's the best defense in the.
The guy had 150 yards. Against. Like the guy was totally fine in replacement. I love that this is our big tension segment of the week. Power rankings.
It is.
I like it.
It really is.
I would argue as a top two impressive victory. Now, I'm not counting the Saints over the Giants. Like obviously, I mean the Saints over the Panthers. I'm not counting the Vikings over the Giants. Obviously, you're going to have bigger disparities on the scoreboard, right. But I'm not factoring in those teams, as real players.
Right. Yeah. I don't trust them.
So that's what I would think about with the Cowboys. I don't disagree or hate Cowboys, Eagles in your top five. Who's five for you?
Yeah, so I had Baltimore last week. I thought about keeping Baltimore there. Buffalo, again, was a consideration. Miami as well. Miami, to me, the whole thing is just like, okay, you won at home in September, which has kind of been your MO. Like, let me see you like win that kind of a game on the road. So, because of that, at number five, I did ultimately decide to go with the Dallas Cowboys chief rival, the Philadelphia Eagles at number five.
Oh, look at that. A little trickery.
What a change up that was. Your best contribution to the show this morning. Well
no,
done.
Just slightly. Like, I mean, I had Philly above Dallas at the start of the season. I think Dallas's win was better on the road, but I mean, Saquon Barkley showing that if he's healthy and can be used the right way in the dimension of what Philly already can do with all their different multiple ways of winning offense, and they've got a better offensive coordinator there in Philadelphia than Dallas. So I got the Eagles at five.
This one, I struggled with number five here. Had a lot of teams here I could have put. Philly was one of them. Cowboys were one of them. But I went with the other team in Texas, the Houston Texans.
Okay.
Kept them at number five.
The armpit with my lottery winnings there in Sugarland. NFL Power Rankings every single week, 1 through 5, 5 through 1 from you, so we can all keep score on the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorney text line. What did you choose last night? The World Series champs or debate number two? Next on Sean and RJ.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the 2-1 delivery, and that's hit high in the air to deep right center field. That is crushed, and that is a monster home run for Jock Peterson. And he demolished it. Exit velocity, 109 miles an hour.
Ooh, Eric Nandel with the call. Nate Eovaldi, gets lit up. The Rangers offense, besides Wyatt Langford, does absolutely nothing, and they were blanked yesterday in the World Series rematch by the Diamondbacks, 6-0 on this radio station. They are now 7 games back in the wild card, but you are getting Thursday, Friday, Saturday excitement. It's going to be Kumar, DeGrom Friday, and then Saturday, Max Scherzer.
Yeah, I mean, that's as intriguing a lineup of three pitchers in a row as you can draw this late in the season for the Rangers. Like, I mean, with everything that they've had go wrong, that's kind of like, hey, here's everything that we have left to throw at you that would be of interest. And Kumar's the one that I'm really excited about. That's the guy that I'm, you know, I know what DeGrom is as long as he's healthy. I know what Scherzer is as long as he's healthy. I'm really interested to see, okay, does he take this leap, okay, or are we going to see, like with other prospects in the past, Leiter, Owen White, some of these other guys, they get up here and then there's struggles.
I did not watch or pay much attention to the Rangers game whatsoever because I was all in on this.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there. And this is what's happening in our country, and it's a shame.
So there it is. In Ohio, apparently the Haitians are eating dogs, cats, and ducks.
That's what it is. It's the ducks. Yeah.
The ducks. You tweeted out that this debate was worse than the first one. I'm going to guess this gets higher ratings. I'm going to guess just because of the Kamala Harris intrigue that at least I had. I'm trying to remember why I was so hyped up for the first one. And I was, but it was like, okay, we've already seen this before.
Biden, Trump, like, I mean, we hadn't seen totally Trump and Biden across from each other since people started having a lot of cognitive questions about Biden.
Yeah. Okay. And that's why I thought, because, like, you know, this one I thought was worse because, like, obviously Biden was cognitively just gone at that point, and that wasn't something that was any of us really should have seen. That they should not have put him in that position. They should have known better. They did.
Weekend at Biden's.
They did him dirty by putting him out there. But this was two people who...
Well, they didn't know. They didn't know up until that point. It was,
right.
We were surprised. We were surprised by it all.
Yeah. We all found out in an hour, but they've been around him for 3 years. They didn't know.
Yeah.
But this one was...
Follow Holland's Twitter account.
Right.
You would have known. This one tell the White House to follow Dutch's Twitter account.
Yeah. This one was two seemingly normal humans in some way.
She made Trump shake her hand. These are some of my notes. She triggered him with the rally comment. Nothing irritates or pisses him off more than saying you don't have a Super Bowl crowd show up attendance-wise for your rallies. The pets getting eaten. The moderators, a lot of Republicans are ticked off saying it was 3-on-1, that it was rigged. He had his Biden insults in there, says Biden hates her. And then no one was answering any questions, according to social media and many of us watching.
That's, to me, the disappointment here. Like, why do we have the...
It's a rebuttal thing.
I know. These things are not... like
I have to respond. No, I have to respond. I have to respond. So then... And then the things that you're uncomfortable about, whether it's abortion or the border, you don't want to...
Talk about.
Expose yourself, so you don't want to talk about it or answer the question.
Politics is a very dirty game. It's about presenting.
Do other countries have these debates? Do other countries have the top two candidates, those who actually have elections? And do they put them up there against each other? I don't know.
They definitely do, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's every country or if it's just a couple. Because I know there have been, I can't remember what country, there was an assassination during one of these, like, debates years ago in some other country. I can't remember where. But, I mean, yeah, there are other spots that do it. No, it wasn't there. They don't have debates there. It's just one rule. But it's...
He went into that, too. I nearly got my head blown off because of the things you say. That's right. And then she almost called him something. She almost called him something when she's like, because of this. And she paused, and she was getting ready to say something bad. She did it for effect.
Yeah, that could be it, too. Just very intentional.
While RJ and I love, like, the chaos, the
the mess, the reality drama, you like take it to heart more, and that it bothers you to the point that you can't and don't want to watch it.
Right.
You're sad for the state of affairs of it. And while RJ and I are looking for entertainment,
it's something where it's like, can you not just, I don't need moderator breaking in and like live fact checking. I don't need the talking over each other. I don't need the, like, to me, it's just at this point, it's gotten to the point where it's like, all right, submit questions to both of them. Let them record 1 minute answers. And then like, they're not even on the same stage together. That's kind of like, that's the point that I'm at, because it's just, it's
because
theater.
In the first debate, CNN caught some heat for not fact checking in the moment. But now when ABC fact checked in the moment, it came across as, because look, let's be honest and real about it. Trump is known as an embellisher. So then when you embellish certain things, the best, millions, billions, that can go under the category of fact check. So when
the perfect example is the pet thing, the audio clip we paid. Because I think it's the real story is that there were 20,000 Haitian immigrants that went to this town in Ohio.
Yeah.
That were chopping heads off of ducks and eating them in a park.
Yeah.
Which is better.
It's not.
It's Bobby Belt PETA.
But if you know, from Trump's standpoint, that's not a sound like cats and dogs, your pets.
Yeah.
That's the soundbite, right? So that's the embellishment.
I think my friend put it perfectly. He said, it's like not understanding or not comprehending, calling the team who fouls more for more fouls. Why do the Detroit Bad Boy Pistons keep getting all these whistles? Well, because they have a bunch of thugs and they're going to beat the hell out of you. There's a reason you do your impression, right?
Yeah.
And it's the best of this and that. So if he's fact-checked more, it's going to come across more as they're picking on him and questioning him. When CNN, who dislikes him, in my opinion, it's like 33-1 in the fact-check comparison.
There's a little bit of Orwellian type of slant towards fact check in general, though, I think, for me.
I don't know what any of that. I have never understood what Orwellian means. I know it's some guy. War of the Worlds guy, right?
No, look, basically, fact check can very easily be like, I'm not going to get too deep into it because you can Google it. But the idea of fact checks have historically throughout debates occurred in post-debate wrap-up. It is not in the moment, like choosing who you're going to check and when you're going to check them. And this is, to me, like, it's consistently been, all right, we're in post-debate wrap-up. Here are statements made by both candidates that we look at and we say, this wasn't true, or this is what we have here, and this is, you know, the evidence that supports it. And a lot of times it's not on something that could be considered a little bit of an opinion that you're fact checking, which seems like they were doing, or what they've done to both sides. Like, they've done this the last three elections to both sides at times where they will fact check something where it's like, well, your fact check technically isn't a fact either. You're saying like, research kind of says this, or we're doing that. And so to me, it's let them say it, present whatever the evidence is in post debate wrap up, and let people make up their minds.
After the debate, Taylor Swift decided to announce her endorsement of Kamala Harris. And this morning on Fox and Friends, President Trump responded.
Just to finish up on that point, then.
By the way, Lawrence is doing a very good job, I have to say. He really is.
He is.
He's doing a great. Hey, I've got a quick question for you. Out of nowhere, after the debate last night, Taylor Swift endorsed Kamala Harris. What do you think?
Well, I actually like I actually like Mrs. Mahomes much better, if you want to know the truth. She's a big Trump fan. I was not a Taylor Swift fan. It was just a question of time. You couldn't possibly endorse Biden. You look at Biden, you couldn't possibly endorse him. But she's a very liberal person. She seems to always endorse a Democrat, and she'll probably pay a price for it at the in the marketplace. But no, I like Brittany. I think Brittany's great. Brittany was got a lot of news last week. She's a big MAGA fan. That's the one I like much better than Taylor Swift.
Right. Brittany is
Mahomes.
Mahomes. They're great friends.
The wife of the great quarterback, and he is a great quarterback.
My favorite team from Kansas City.
I think she's terrific.
Okay. If what are you thinking of your Pat? Are you happy and are you thrilled, or are you like kind of like, I remember when the Patriots kind of got exposed for who they like, right? It was, I think it was Tom and Bill, and it was like, it's like, don't like shout me out too much. Is that what he's thinking, or is it like, yes, proud? And then what happens? What happens to Tay-Tay and Brittany if they're on opposite ends different suites?
They were in different suites.
That was the report.
Divided just like the rest of America.
But they were together.
Kansas City Radio. They were together when?
They were together at the U.S. Open tennis.
Brittany?
Yeah, this weekend.
Oh, they were?
Yeah, because they remember they played on Thursday. Uh-huh. So on Friday, Friday or Saturday, they were at the U.S. Open. So they were shown together.
Kansas City Radio, you have to ask Patrick about this.
There are a lot of really great Trump impressions out there. Yours makes me laugh. Shane Gillis's makes me laugh. There is no impression that's funnier than just hearing him talk about something.
Very true.
You know, I don't like her very much. She's no Mrs. Mahomes. I love Patrick. Great quarterback.
That's what I want to know. What will Patrick Mahomes say when asked about this? Give me the response.
He'll say Brittany's got it. You know, Brittany's her own person. She has her own opinions. I don't share.
You know, I like to focus on football. Yeah. Everybody's got their own opinions. I really just kind of focus on my job. I don't even think much about those things.
So Pat's got this with Trump, the brother and all his crap, then the father with the drinking and driving. Yeah.
He is. You know what? He, like, honestly,
Do we feel? It's obvious to say I feel bad for him. Look at what he deals with. But is there some mysterious Pat Mahomes we don't know about?
No, he is lauded like by everybody that he's somebody who rose up from circumstances that a lot of people typically don't. And so no, I think he's really actually impressive. I think with the stability that he shows, given everything else that he grew up around.
Sickening news to add to the Johnny Hockey story.
Both. So we knew last week that Matthew Gaudreau's wife, so the brother of Johnny, was pregnant. And then Johnny's wife yesterday at the eulogy announces that she, too, is pregnant with a child.
Nine weeks
pregnant. That's almost out of the first trimester.
And they have two really young kids already.
They do. So now he'll be the dad of three when she does give birth. And it just continues. What an awful story. And I
can't remember one that is this like heartbreaking. It's obviously troubling. A high profile, mm-hmm. more high profile sports story, but it seems like they were like a fairy tale. It really does. And then right before the wedding, everyone's pregnant. The brother's out. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, there's not really any circumstances. I feel like there's not another note you could add to this that would be like, oh, this story's gotten more devastating. But it's like each time there's another update, it's like, oh, this is getting more and more depressing.
Is the run game coming back in style? That's next in Below the Belt here on Sean and RJ. Your home of the Cowboys is 105.3 The Fan. The great Bobby Belt.
You ruined the morning show.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Kellen wants to light up the scoreboard. I want to run the damn ball. Maybe that's not such a controversial take after all, Chop.
No, maybe not.
Maybe Mike McCarthy was right.
He can do it at BYU if Steve Young has his way.
I was about to say, more on McCarthy in a second. We got to get to Kellen Moore, the best offensive play designer in the NFC East by far.
Shut up.
Kellen Moore last
week. Tell that to the Chargers. What happened to his ass in L.A.?
Last week, Steve Young was doing a radio tour in Idaho for a book that he's written on law. Because he actually has a law degree from BYU. But Steve Young was talking to Boise Radio, and the question of Kellen Moore came up, and he started heaping praise on top of Kellen and said, I got my eyes on him.
I'll whisper it to you guys. I want Kellen to, you know, he needs to be a future coach at BYU. So, you know, I don't worry about that right now.
Kellen Moore, this is his dream, by the way. Kellen doesn't want to, like, I mean, Kellen enjoys coaching the NFL. Kellen has always wanted to be a college head coach.
I thought he had the opportunity to.
No, he went to Boise, which would have been the perfect fit. Boise, apparently, at the time when they interviewed him, and Kellen got better and learned from the experience, but at the time when Boise interviewed him at the end of the 20 season, I think it was the end of 20 or 21, Boise liked all the X's and O's stuff, they felt like he came in there and it's like, oh, he has no plan on how to build a program. Like that it's just everything that goes into the CEO stuff of recruiting and, you know, getting things set up, building a staff and building an offseason program. When they sat down and talked to him, they're like, he's too far behind on this. He doesn't have a strong enough plan to do these sort of things. But Kellen is somebody who I think X's and O's wise is really sharp. As much as like people see just kind of the stale personality on the outside, he's a younger guy who's generally well liked by his teammates, is somebody who connects well to young players, has that sort of thing. I think college is absolutely in his future. BYU, I would be really surprised by. Although if you're talking about like the way that he can, you know, the reputation he has on the West Coast in terms of being a guy who came from Prosser, Washington, has connections all up and down the West Coast to coaches and stuff like that. And that's obviously where BYU does a lot of their work. He would be pretty good, I think, coaching at the college level. It would just be a matter of, has he fixed that issue of developing a plan, like developing a program structure, things like that.
Concepts of a plan.
That's exactly it. Is that that's the thing that he got the biggest feedback on. I don't know that he's ever going to get a shot as an NFL head coach, even if he didn't want to. I think that's got to be his future at some point is college.
I think he'd be a pretty good college coach. Look, you see with Josh Heupel, like if you have a very good, like it's like a very easy system to figure out for
Josh
all
Heupel,
the players,
the coach at TU. Tennis,
yeah, right, absolutely. Like it's a plug and play. Like you get an accurate quarterback, that thing is going to put up 60 points. And it's like, especially with college defenses, they almost all, so many of them now are playing the 3-3-5. And you can really expose teams with you know, just remotely good quarterback play.
But don't look at me. I don't care about Kellen Moore. We're two stops past this. I have nothing for it. I don't care.
I'm gonna make my call right now. He's the next head coach at Colorado. That'll be my gutsy take here after Deion. Okay, the famous quote from Mike McCarthy last year, which he hated getting out in the public, even though it was said on the record, and he has constantly tried to shame people behind the scenes for it ever since then, is that Mike had said, Kellen wants to light up the scoreboard. I want to run the damn ball. That he wants to give his defense a break, give him a rest. And Chop, we both agree that that's not that running the ball is not the way to win in today's NFL.
It's disgusting.
Right. You can have it as a part of your game, but only if it's right there. You soften up the defense enough to where
Babe Laufenberg was dismissing the importance of the run game last Thursday.
Yes, he was
at 8:40,
as he should, because EPA, which is expected points added, so this is an efficiency stat. It's basically it measures how well a team performs relative to expectation.
Slow down, Bobby. Just breathe. I know what's going on behind the scenes. Just breathe and concentrate on executing each word.
Wrong. I don't have Adderall, Chop. Yeah. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
So why do I have this right here?
ADD or yes. The ADHD. You need it to come. Your ADHD needed to come down.
Expected points added.
Hey!
Sean is a measure of how well a team performs relative to expectation. And so basically this will be on a per snap basis. So a lot of what goes into this is third and seven, given like, you know, down distance, where you're at on the field, and the probabilities that go into how successful you're likely to be there on that drive and how likely it is that you're going to score on that play or on that drive and a number of different factors like that. So the expected points added historically over the last decade has been way more efficient for passing the ball than running the ball.
I think what the number was the best rushing attack was the equivalent to about the 17th or 18th best passing attack.
Yeah, in fact, EPA, which is what it stands for, EPA per play over the last decade, since 2014, there's not been a single season where running the ball on average adds to your EPA. It on average is negative EPA for each play.
Mm.
And for passing the ball, it's relatively been around on average for much of the last decade, around a half a point, or a 0.05 is what it right. is. No, 0.05. And typically,
half a point would be amazing.
Yeah, no, half a point would be ridiculous. But it's something that where you go back, it's the complete opposite end on the negative spectrum for running the ball. Until the last couple of years, where running has still maintained down. But the last 2 years, passing has also been negative EPA on average per play. And that's the first time it's been that way in 10 to 12 years. And this first week of the NFL season, might have seen the full reversal. Because in the first week, it was negative 0.07 EPA per play to throw the ball, and it was even, flat even for running the ball.
That was Bill Belichick's big week one takeaway, the number of 175-yard passers or less. Yeah.
So I have a theory on this that I just came up with.
Hit me.
Well thought.
So those numbers were like that over the last 10, 15 years. Because everyone, so 15 years ago, not everyone was big on the analytics of the game, right?
Right.
Okay.
And now everyone is.
For the most part, yes.
There's maybe two or three teams that aren't.
Mm-hmm.
So because everyone's in on the analytics now, everyone believes passing the ball is the way to win. So what you have is 15 years ago, if you did not have a top 10, 15 quarterback, you still ran an old school play, right, type of system. And now everyone is throwing the ball like crazy, including the quarterbacks who have no business throwing the ball like crazy.
Okay.
And I wonder if that skews the numbers down.
Well, what is really,
see what I mean?
Yeah, what's really skewing these numbers right now is people like Lamar Jackson, is that you take running quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks are becoming such a thing that the EPA they're adding by when they run the ball and the type of gash runs that they're getting, or when they're scrambling and a pass play is taken away, then that's starting to balance things out a little bit. In fact, they said that this past week, there's been no week since 1999, which is as far back as EPA data goes. There is no week where quarterback scrambles scored as high on EPA as they did last week. That's the highest week in the history of the NFL where scrambling as a quarterback added to your end result. So when you actually take out quarterbacks running, passing is still considered much more efficient. Like the numbers showed that in week one, well, passing the ball was still more efficient than running it as long as you took out the quarterback scrambles. But these guys that run or reverses to receivers like they did with CD and they had success with that, that's showing that gadget run plays and some of the different ways to run, if you just kind of evolve your run game a little bit and include other aspects of it, it's showing it can be as efficient as
throwing. So no one is buying that the hand it off, give this guy 20, 25 carries is coming back. Just like I group that into the category of the postman in the NBA, winning with small ball and baseball.
Right.
None of us are thinking that this is a sign of that, the zig and zag.
Oh, I don't think it's a sign that the singular back is coming back. Like, I don't think we'll ever see that
handoffs
again. But I could absolutely see it. I think it does need to come back for certain teams. If you don't
have the bums at quarterback.
Right. If you have bums at quarterback, you're not going to win either way. But I think your better chance of winning is to try to slow the game down. Like, if you're like
who's Rob Mayo, you know, Patriots,
right, yeah,
the run game that they had.
Yeah.
Ramondre with Jacoby Brissett.
Who I told you to draft.
But like,
what?
Who I told you to draft, Ramondre.
It was a good pick by you.
If you're the Giants, if you're Carolina, right? Those kind of teams, Raiders. You don't have a viable quarterback. Maybe the Raiders might with the Gardner, but you don't have a viable quarterback. You're not going to win by throwing the ball 30 times with those guys.
How many? We talked about this the other day. There were two quarterbacks that had 300-yard passing games this past week. It was Matthew Stafford, who went into overtime, didn't handle the ball in overtime, but it was an overtime game. And then it was Tua. Those were the only 300-yard passers this week. In fact, that's the first time two or fewer passers threw for 300 yards in week one since 2005. My mom was around to see the last one, guys. That's how long ago it was, okay? There were seven players that rushed for 100 yards compared to the two 300-yard passers. It's like, okay, well, maybe you got up big. Yeah, Derek Carr only threw for 200 yards. Baker Mayfield threw for under 300. There were still 100-yard receivers. There were four receivers that went for 120 yards receiving this past week. Five running backs went for 120.
Mm.
And so it's becoming a little bit of a something where you have more success on the ground. Teams are trying to take away the pass with the two high looks, but you're also getting, again, the scrambling. Jaden Daniels rushed for 88 yards. That was 10th among all players this past week. We already know that Jalen Hurts uses his legs. Lamar Jackson was one of those guys who had 122 yards rushing or 120 yards rushing. That was four right there. And so the ability even of like big time passers like Mahomes and Allen and their ability to scramble and kind of put pressure on things, that also incorporates it. Now, the other question of this is specific to Dallas. Does that give you any pause if the league is trending this direction that you don't have one of these guys anymore who's mobile and can threaten with his legs?
That doesn't give me pause. I had the pause already.
Yeah.
I need
you
someone,
and Jerry both.
I need someone with some burst. You know, I know you had written in your prep email, hey, it's fine as long as you can get 4 yards of carry. No, man, I need the threat of someone who can break one. And right now, that's my biggest problem with the running game. Zeke Elliott is getting these props because it was a little bit overblown. Look, we have to throw ourselves into the mix. No one thought Zeke was, like, dead, but that's the way we treated him. Like, he was the NFL running back version of, like, a dead body.
Right.
And, you know, especially early in the season, he's capable of what he did the other day against Cleveland, and we were more looking forward to a goal line carry, fourth and one. But there's no breakaway. What's the stat that Eatman gave us about a 30-yard run? It's been
They haven't had a 30-yard run since 21.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
That's the problem.
That's a lot. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, yeah, you absolutely want somebody that has some burst. I mean, but, like, would you not have wanted Curtis Martin? I know it's different. He's, but he just basically, I mean, I don't remember Curtis doing.
Are you calling Zeke Curtis Martin?
I think that's offensive to Curtis Martin at this point.
It's very offensive.
At this point, but Zeke's, I think Zeke's peak was
okay.
What do you think?
Well, I'm talking about like right now.
Or right now.
Like, we always think 5 yards per carry, I think, is like, oh, that's a really efficient big time runner. What's the number for receivers, for instance? Like, yards per catch, we go 15?
15, I think.
15, okay.
13.5 to 15.
This past week on the 15 yards, there were 12 receivers who had 15 yards per carry. There were 16 players that rushed for 5 yards per carry this week.
Wow. That's a lot. Is there a minimum there, or could it be one run?
No, that's qualifying, guys.
Let's get you ready for Rocker, DeGrom, and Scherzer with our Odyssey Baseball Insider. Our buddy Brett Boone joins us on the Home of the Rangers next.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.